Ready, set, go!
And the truth shall set you free!
Welcome to One Life Radio.
We are going higher indeed, everyone. Welcome to One Life Radio podcast. We are doing it live from our home studios. It is unedited, real discussions about living your best life. And today we have Dr. Lori Whatley with us. And I'm just going to let the music play a little bit. I haven't heard it in a while. We've been recording about once a week, something like that. Yeah, so it's great to be back on the mic, and especially with Dr. Lori Whatley. She was a regular on the show for a long time, and it's great to have her back. So we're talking about, and you're going to love this topic, you guys. We are talking about five ways to disconnect from a narcissist with Dr. Whatley. Oh, my gosh. How are you doing today, Dr. Whatley?
I am doing great.
I feel like I just said your name like 10 times in a row. Dr. Whatley. I think I'm a little nervous. Anyway, but it's great to have you with us. It is. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Lori Whatley. If you have not listened to her before, she's got 25 years of experience in the psychology and the science of connection. She specializes in addressing technology over connectivity. She has successfully helped businesses and families manage distractions while promoting genuine connections. And Lord knows we all need that. She's also the author of Connected and Engaged, focusing on fostering real connections amidst today's digital challenges. Dr. Lori has worked with thousands of clients, both domestic and international. Her client list spans from CEOs and high-level executives of multi-billion dollar companies, foreign diplomats, professional athletes, and award-winning producers. As a thought leader in her field, she has been featured in Inc. magazine, Yahoo News, ESPN Business Insider, plus many, many other local and regional publications. She believes in the power of strong connections for better mental well-being. Her approachable style and deep understanding of human emotions makes her a go-to resource for recreating lasting and meaningful bonds. So great to have you with us, Dr. Lori.
Well, thank you. As I said, it's my pleasure. I'm always enjoy getting to catch up with you all.
Well, you know, we originally heard about this this topic that we chose today, five ways to disconnect from a narcissist. When Marie Early's on the mic here too. I forgot to introduce you. You know, Marie, you found this on Dr. Lori's website, right?
Yeah. So I saw a post originally.
Okay.
And then I saw that you have a guide you can download.
And who doesn't need that, right? I really feel that so many people have at least one bona fide narcissist in their life. Would you agree?
I think you may be right.
And it's a topic, and you know, it's a topic that's a little touchy too, because you know, you never know who's listening, and right? I think narcissism. How common is it? You know,
you say you never know who's listening, but most narcissists, they would never would admit that they're a narcissist. So they'll think this is not for them anyway. They'll probably tell a friend or someone, oh, this is great. You should listen to this for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
They never identify.
Well, I have this one nephew who's a narcissist. It's well known in the family. And, you know, you talk about five ways to disconnect from a narcissist. You know, one of the things I had to do is really eliminate contact with him. And it really hurts, too, because that's not my heart, you know, and I'm hoping that he'll grow and change as he gets older. But it's very difficult to deal with a narcissist. But before we get any deeper into this topic, how do we define a narcissist? Let's start with that.
Well, I think, you know, it's so interesting because now that is such a buzzword. I mean, you know, it's the thing that everyone's talking about. And before, when I would have clients come in, maybe 10 years, well, let's say 15 years ago, they didn't talk, you know, label someone so much as a narcissist. But I think now with social media and all, people are all armchair, you know, psychologists, and they're labeling people. Oh, you're a narcissist. You're a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily understanding that we all have narcissistic tendencies.
Right.
Like, no, to hear that, but you know, that doesn't mean that we're all narcissists. It's kind of a spectrum. You know, you can have narcissistic tendencies, or you can be full blown narcissistic personality disorder, straight from the DSM, you know, diagnostic manual that we use to diagnose people. So there is there's a big gap there, but you know, as you said, when you are interacting with a narcissist, it's exhausting.
It is
absolutely exhausting.
Yeah. They like to fight. They like to argue. That's what I find. And they must be right. And so that's a little difficult. But in order for someone, you know, because I think we all say, oh gosh, no one wants to be a narcissist. Nobody wants to be self-centered or selfish. So what are some of the distinct traits of a bona fide narcissist? Somebody who's got the narcissist personality disorder, as you said, as identified in the DSM.
Well, yeah, those are at the highest end of the spectrum. And, you know, they have entitlement. They have a lack of empathy. They have a need for admiration. They have, very self-centered. I think if you think about in terms of, wow, what do you feel like after you've been involved in a relationship with someone like that? Well, you feel exhausted. You feel frustrated. You're right. They do like to argue, but they like to argue because they like to be right. And so how can you be right unless you argue and show everyone else how right you are and how wrong they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's a sense of arrogance, you know, a very much a sense of self-importance, exaggerating from their achievements, their talents, a grandiose ideations, kind of a preoccupation with that, with fantasies of success and power and their brilliance. They insist that they have the best of everything and, you know, feeling like they deserve special privileges.
Mm. Wow. Marie, you got your hand up in the air, like she wants to say something. She's talking with her hands.
So, well, would you say the most, like, super successful people in the world are narcissists then?
Not necessarily. Let me say this. So, that is a good question, though. Really good question, because sometimes it might look that way. Now, I like to talk about two kinds of narcissists. The overt narcissist and the covert narcissist. That's not, way in my life. Because, there are some people that are, it's just so obvious. It's very easy to diagnose them. It's very obvious, right?
Those are
overt. The covert, now those are really, really difficult because they leave you feeling absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder, like, did that just happen? Did that really happen? Those narcissists are much harder to manage, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, how can you be 100% sure? Like, is there any, like, okay, if this person does X, Y, Z, they are a bona fide narcissist?
Well, if you are a clinician and you want to be 100% sure, you use the DSM.
Okay.
And down through it, and you say, well, you have this, and this. And if they have a certain number, of these elements, then they're definitely a narcissist.
Mm.
You know, if they just have one or two, then obviously not. They just have narcissistic tendencies, right?
Right.
And listen, now I've got to mention this, with social media. I mean, we are growing little narcissists with all of the selfies and the constantly being on social media. I mean, it is absolutely exhausting if you think about it. we're kind of nurturing that, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, this is one of my questions, is a narcissist born or are they created?
That is a great, great question. And so the thing is that, you know, if you have a narcissistic personality disorder, that's considered a cluster B personality disorder, which those are things that we're born with, but they are exacerbated. So they might lie dormant, but under, you know, certain nurturing, a certain sort of nurturing, then they might become very obvious. Let's say, for instance, parenting. Got to blame a little bit on the parents.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, I'm a parent, so I can say that.
I'm thinking about someone.
If there is too much adoration, then they can become a narcissist. Like, kids know, like, when they are being adored for something they actually did, or just, you know, a fake adoration, just telling them how wonderful they are, they actually know a difference in that. And so even as young children. Mm-hmm. And then if we have the opposite end of that spectrum, which is too much criticism, that can also exacerbate narcissism, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no.
So it's in everything in life, we want to keep balance right there in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Not adoring our kids just because they're cute, but because maybe they actually earned it, right?
And is, like, that ego involved?
Does that make sense?
Well, and is that the parents, you know, because it's like, you know, I'm trying to talk about this without identifying anyone, but how do I phrase this? Is a parent that is seeking their own, that has an ego that maybe even is a narcissist, a narcissistic parent, are they more likely to raise a narcissistic child? Dr. Lori, are you there?
Hey, yeah. I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. I'm just going to be transparent here. This is a great thing about podcasting. It can be very interesting. I think, and I had some papers over my phone because we're doing this through a Rodecaster in our home studios, and I think I hit the mute button for a second. So, apologies, everyone. Let's continue rolling, and this is just like a football game. I just threw an interception. Let's keep going. Okay, next play.
Where did you lose me on that? So
is a narcissistic parent more likely to raise a narcissistic child because they want that child to be a reflection of them and their greatness? And do you see what I'm saying?
Sometimes, absolutely. But also, maybe think about this in terms of a parent with poor self-esteem, and they might say, "I want them to be special. I want them." So that could also be the case.
Wouldn't a narcissist almost be competitive with a child, though? Because if the narcissist is all me, 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 then would they want their child?
Yes, I am thinking of one particular situation that I am aware of, where there was a father who's a narcissist, and he wanted everything special for his son. So he would always make sure, like, I want him to be treated special. I don't want him to be reprimanded by teachers. I don't want him, you know, if he got in trouble at school, when the dad would go to talk to the headmaster, it was always the headmaster's fault, you know, even though there were like five schools by the end of it. It was never his child's fault. It was all. So if you think about that, the child is aware of that, and they're watching this narcissistic behavior be modeled for, you know, this child. And so they pick up a lot of the tendencies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I, interestingly enough, was just exposed to a story of a very prestigious family here in Dallas. And one of their children got into a lot of trouble, committed a crime, basically, and basically got away with it because the father paid everybody off. And then this person just got worse and worse, you know.
Absolutely.
And I'm guessing that this person is a narcissist.
Probably. Yeah. Sounds like it. Unfortunately, that picture you just painted is not, an unusual picture mm-hmm. of a narcissistic family. You know, you can have whole families where, you know, they're all narcissists.
Yeah.
Which is, you can literally, I had a client who I was seeing who, you know, started dating and she went and met the family and then it just became very clear to her. Like, oh my word, I think they're all narcissists. Is that possible? So, yeah, it is.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it true that the utmost matter of importance to a narcissist is that they never look bad? In other words, it's like you were saying, it's never their fault. But that's like a big, big thing, right? It's never their fault.
Oh, absolutely. They never take responsibility. They never want to take responsibility and the blame is, you know, their number one tool, blaming everyone else. It's your fault. That's why, you know, narcissists don't get better because they don't get help because they don't think they need help. Everyone else needs help, mm-hmm. not them.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is wrong.
And do they have a frail ego as well, and a deep insecurity, and that
absolutely. I mean, there are the covert narcissists. You know, can be very broken. Very if they're the ones that you know had so much criticism, their defense mechanism you know becomes over compensating for mm-hmm. that by being big me, little you. And that is a definite wounded ego. And it's really hard if I work with a couple and, now I said narcissists don't come to therapy and they don't unless they're, forced, like if they're in a marriage
yeah.
and they're to leave marriage and, you know, so they say, oh, let's go to therapy. So they'll come, but you know, they're always pointing the finger. Like her, she's the problem. And so if they're not the problem, then they also cannot be the solution.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. This is such a fascinating subject. It really is. And so for somebody out there listening that says, you know, maybe is questioning themselves like, oh my gosh, am I a narcissist? How do you know, Dr. Lori, that you're not a narcissist? You're not a narcissist if ...
Right. So if you ask that question, you're almost certainly not a narcissist. If you ask that question. And I tell my clients that because narcissists would never ask that question because it would never occur to them that everyone else is not wrong. And it would never occur to them ever. So most likely if you ask that question, you're not a narcissist because you have, you know, you have empathy. You are able to, you know, realize that the world doesn't revolve around you and that maybe you are wrong sometimes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A very smart friend of mine who's a doctor as well told me that there is no cure for narcissistic personality disorder. Is that true?
It's true. That is true. What you can do is you can actually... if they do come to therapy because they were forced, which that never works out well, but sometimes they can become aware. If you can find a way to help them gain awareness of some of their behaviors and how they're affecting mm-hmm. their partner, mm-hmm. then they may try to adjust some of those behaviors if they are motivated to stay in that relationship. But most of them do not change and are able to make the changes to get well. So,
Marie?
I was saying, so they end up in mostly codependent relationships, right? Because the partner is always like, I can change them. I can fix them.
Quite often, because they quite often on the other side of a narcissist is a people pleaser or codependent. And it's like narcissists have, you know, they have the radar and they will find that person. Well, and I always know what's coming in on the other side of a narcissist is that personality.
Yeah. Well, and you say codependent, but a lot of people are just kind of, you know, innocent and have never been exposed to a narcissist, especially younger girls, right? That maybe are quite innocent and sweet and haven't really been damaged yet by the truths, many truths of the world and how people can be, because narcissists can be very, very manipulative. And if you're young and innocent, just somebody who's, you know, got an incredibly soft heart, you know, you could be more easily manipulated by a narcissist, right?
That's what they're looking for. I'll never forget sitting in a session. There was another therapist in there and I was in there, and the other therapist said, the client asked the other therapist, you know, does my partner know what he's doing? Speaking of the narcissist, does he know that he's doing these things to me and that they're hurting me so much? And the therapist said, absolutely. Wow. Does that make him knowing that this is intentional? This is intentional. They know exactly what they're doing. And they have a very clear agenda for who they are going to find to do this to. Who is the most likely person to be on the other side of a narcissist? Well, it's never a narcissist. Mm-hmm. It was a codependent, gentle, kind, agreeable, you know, all very empathetic. They don't need admiration. They aren't self-centered. That personality, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are all of us a little bit codependent as well? I feel that we are, right? Because we're social creatures. We
have to be so careful with that, because, and I have clients tell me, I don't want to be this way because that would be codependent. And, you know, being kind, and some people mistake being kind and being considerate and being thoughtful as being codependent. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, we can do things for other people and be thoughtful of other people. It's having good, healthy boundaries when we realize I'm on the other side of a narcissist or someone with narcissistic tendencies. Mm-hmm. I'm on the other side of that and I need to protect myself. Well, boundaries are your friend. So you want to pull boundaries in and, you know, utilize those to stay safe.
Well, let's talk about that, because we're talking about five ways to disconnect from a narcissist. And this first one is setting boundaries. Let's talk about that, Dr. Lori.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we all have to have boundaries in our everyday life, and we're starting to need them more than ever. Boundaries with ourselves, boundaries with other people, boundaries with people that we love, right? So they are our very best friends. They help other people understand where we end and they begin, right? So we have to be very clear about our boundaries, and, you know, that definitely upsets a narcissist, especially if you've never had boundaries with them and suddenly you're going to have them. You know, that can be very upsetting. The only people that don't like your boundaries are the ones that don't benefit from them, right?
Dr. Lori, what are some behaviors that a narcissist will do to their partner that would be considered like pushing boundaries?
Well, they would maybe just walk right through your boundaries. Mm-hmm. So it depends on dealing with an overt or a covert. But, you know, if you say, well, I'm not really going to, this is a simple one. Like, I'm not going to eat after 5 o'clock because, you know, it doesn't feel healthy to me, and I'm trying to have healthier eating habit. Mm-hmm. So say a person tells their narcissistic partner that, and the narcissistic partner might say, okay. And then at 6 o'clock, they have dinner ready, mm-hmm. or, you know, they push the boundary, or it might be an overt narcissist who just says, that's stupid, and I'm not doing that, and we're eating at 6 o'clock, and you know, you're mm-hmm. going to eat it, enjoy mm-hmm. it.
A lot of people think that, you know, that narcissists are mostly men, but that's not true, is it? And as you said, with this growing social media, you know, of just narcissistic behavior of constantly posting about yourself and hyper focused on what you look like, I feel like we have created a lot of narcissists, but there's just as many female as there are male, right? Or no?
Oh, absolutely. I think absolutely there are. And I think so.
Well, you know, yeah, there's a lot of ways that you could, I mean, we could elaborate this. I was thinking about a friend of mine who I think is narcissist, and she constantly wants to pick on one of my former husbands, okay, ex-husband, because she doesn't politically agree with him. And I've asked her over and over again, you know, please don't do that. You know, it's not good. I don't like just sitting there beating somebody up over past mistakes, or even because they're politically think differently than I do, or she does, or any of us do. I think that's wrong. But and it just keeps happening over and over again. That's a boundary. And I think that, what do you think about what I just said?
I definitely think that is a boundary. And I almost think, you know, now that you mentioned that, the political thing, and I almost feel like it is narcissistic. If I think that you are supposed to think just like me.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that a little bit narcissistic?
Yes.
I mean, really? Like, yeah. Really? Am I entitled to think that you yeah. have to think like I do? And that is a lack of empathy by me to think that you should be allowed to think the way you want.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know how somebody just, you know, their ego is so big, or they're so narcissistic that they think that their way is the only way. And you know, politically, we all really need to come together and find some common ground. It's really gotten pretty volatile out there. Would you agree?
Well, I agree with you 100%. And I heard a Harvard psychologist recently doing a podcast. It was fabulous. And he said, you know, a lot of what we're seeing out there are narcissists. They're, you know, they are people with this cluster B personality disorder, you know, out there running things and expecting, having these expectations of entitlement. That they are entitled for everyone to think like them, for mm-hmm. everyone they say, for, you know, they have a need for admiration, and they're very self-centered. And I do, I agree. I think it is very self-centered for me to ask you about your political leanings so that I can just, you know, tear into you because they're not like mine.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See that we have normalized that behavior. That's really scary.
This is so cool that we're talking about this. Mm-hmm. I love that we're talking about this. I do. I think the content is just so great today. Okay. So 5 ways to disconnect from a narcissist. The next one is limit contact. How do you do that? You know, I like I told you at the beginning of the podcast, I had to do that with a family member because it was just so bad. It's like, I refuse to be around this person. They're just way too, they just love to fight. And I don't want to have it. So I had to cut my relationship out with them.
But what if you're married?
Well, if you're married, you get a divorce. And hope for the best.
You know, I'm going to say this. Sometimes if I'm working with a couple where let's just say that he is not the narcissist she is, and he doesn't want to admit that she's a narcissist, but really, like, their relationship is very unhealthy, and and it's not good. It's kind of becoming abusive. And sometimes I'll say, you know, you need to take a 30-day no contact, you two. And the reason that I do that is because I want the person that is not the narcissist, in that case that I just explained, the male, mm-hmm. I want him to see what life is like when he is not constantly being berated and being attacked by the narcissist in his life. And I want him, his whole limbic system, to calm down and him to realize, like, whoa, I don't have to live like this. Like, I don't have to be in relationship with this person who is constantly attacking me and so abrasive and combative. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to step away from that for a minute to realize, like, whoa, this feels really nice.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great advice, but I'm not surprised because, you know, you're incredibly talented as a doctor of psychology. Okay, so the last one on here is seek support. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think sometimes you know something's wrong, you can't put your finger on it, and when you are in the vortex, it is very hard to gain clarity. And there again, you know, a wise therapist can help you see. And sometimes if you're not willing to see, they can help you see what it feels like not to be in the presence mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. negative constantly, you know, chipping away at you. And so that sometimes is how I approach it, because some people absolutely do not want to see. I hold up the mirror. They do not want to see what is going on, because then they would have to make a hard decision and they're just not ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is this true? Because I've seen this before, I've seen it before, both personally, and I've seen it with friends, where if a guy, I'm speaking for myself as a female, when a guy doesn't like your friends or wants to remove you from your friends or distance you from your friends and family, that's a red flag of narcissism, is it not?
It is a red flag of narcissism and other personality disorders, because anytime they want to isolate you, it almost feels like, you know, they want to manipulate you. They want to isolate you and gaslight you and manipulate you and really confuse you. So you are on very unstable ground. You feel unsteady all the time and not capable of making the wise choice to isolate yourself from them. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and what are you thinking over there, Marie?
Oh, I'm just wondering, so what is the goal of a narcissist in a relationship? Like, is it to just, they want to have that, you know, have somebody next to them to look good? Or, I mean, do they really have any interest in the relationship? I mean, truly deep down, can they fall in love?
That's a great question.
Well, mostly they're in love with themselves, so they want to... I mean, and so falling in love with someone else would be really hard because they are so in love with themselves, you know, so much self-love there. But if you fit the criteria that they, you know, usually have for the person that is on the other side of them, in other words, they need to have their narcissistic tank filled, let's say. And so... you can do that for them by, never speaking up for yourself, by, always, adoring them, by, never challenging them, by always giving them what they want. If they're narcissists, they really like to look good, so they want you to look good too. So that makes them look even better, right? So if you ever start challenging them, and if you say, you know, I don't really want to do that, or that's a problem. They don't want you standing up for yourself. That doesn't work for them. And of course, never challenging them. If you ever challenge them, then that's going to be a big problem.
Wow. Yeah.
What's the difference between a narcissist and a sociopath?
Well, many sociopaths are narcissistic. I would not say that all narcissists are sociopaths, though, because
thank
supposedly,
God.
supposedly of our population, I think it's much higher. It's sociopathic. There again, I think, you know, by some of the things that we have started allowing, and you know, we're also not only fostering narcissistic behavior, but you know, sociopathic behavior. Mm-hmm. Some of that we seem to think is okay, or we don't recognize it or call it what it is, and so people get away with it, and that just grows it. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this has been such an interesting conversation. I hate to even wrap it up. It's been so great speaking with you, Dr. Lori. Anything else do you think we have not touched on that's important for the listener out there?
Well, I think it is a very important topic in our culture right now. And I mm-hmm. think for our world, for all of us to be responsible citizens, you know, we want to not foster narcissism. We want to do the opposite, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So by educating ourselves and understanding it, it's helpful to squish it.
Well, yeah.
Especially if it's, you know, if it is not making our world a beautiful place, which is what we want, our world to be a beautiful, safe, calm place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know I do. The world's gotten very, very scary. I think there's a lot of people full of anxiety. It can be very intense. Right now, the news, oh my gosh, we talked about the political, you know, just weather out there. It's mm-hmm. very turbulent, right? And
Right. That same person I told you all about, that the Harvard professor, he said, you know, if you want to see some personality disorders, you know, just turn on the news.
Oh, I know.
And instead of, you know, getting the people the help that they need and managing all of that properly, we're not managing it in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. I don't.
And the doctor, you have a book, which is a great book. Dr. Lori is the author of Connected as Engaged, as I said in the opening bio, focusing on fostering real connections amidst today's digital challenges. You did a lot of research before you wrote this book, right? Where we really need to limit social media, not only for ourselves, but for our children, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, goodness, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. The Harvard doctor, what was his name, just by the way? I'm curious. I'd love to hear his speech or read his book or whatever it is. He
say his name. I don't think I can do that, although I heard all of this on a podcast.
Oh, okay.
But
we'll figure it out.
He has a book out that is fabulous. He's written a lot of books, but he has recently written a book that is really good. So, yeah.
We'll find out. I'm going to do an investigation after the show. Right. So great to have you with us. Can't wait to have you back, Dr. Lori. Thank you so much for jumping on the podcast today with us here at One Life Radio.
Thanks, Dr. Lori.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Ours too. Everyone, thank you for listening. And we're going to put this out. So we'll talk to you later, alligators. All right. Bye.
Bye.